page 93, the Mound Builders. Mound Builders, 3400 BC to AD 1400. Please follow along with me. Anyone who traveled up the Mississippi River 900 years ago would have seen, looming in the distance, a four-level mound of earth built by human hands that was bigger than Egypt's greatest pyramid. Around this huge mound stood more than 100 smaller mounds, some topped with walls of wooden poles. Canals for irrigation and transportation threaded among fields of maize. Wooden houses were covered with red and white plaster. Flags of painted animal skin flapped everywhere. This splendid site was Cahokia, home to at least 15,000 Native Americans. Cahokia stood near the present-day site of St. Louis, Missouri. In the 18th century, it was the largest settlement north of the Rio Grande, and it was also part of a long tradition of mound building in the eastern half of North America. Over thousands of years, societies along the Mississippi and the rivers that flowed into it, and some in the southeast, constructed tens of thousands of mounds across the land. Most mounds were shaped like giant cones or layered pyramids. Some, though, were sculpted into enormous birds, lizards, bears, or long-tailed creatures such as alligator. Near Peebles, Ohio, is a 1,300-foot-long mound in the shape of a snake. Page 94. I'm reading first the words on inset. Some societies used the mounds as tombs, burying their nobles inside with textiles, tools, and jewelry. I'm now going to the first paragraph. The earliest known mounds are in Louisiana and are about 5,400 years old. The majority were built later, between 3400 BC and AD 1400. Because mound building is a long-term activity that requires some kind of organization and authority, it tells us that some early Indians lived in settled communities instead of roving in small hunting bands. No one knows exactly why these communities built the mounds, but the structures probably served religious purposes. Some societies used them as tombs, burying their nobles inside the mounds with textiles, tools, and jewelry. Archaeologists don't know what the societies who built the mounds call themselves, but they have given names to several distinct cultures. The Adena culture, which flourished from about 800 to 100 BC, started something big, agriculture. The Adena domesticated a variety of edible or useful plants, including knotweed, maygrass, and tobacco. The Hopewell culture followed the Adena. Hopewell people developed a wide-ranging trade network that exchanged goods such as silver from Ontario and Canada and seashells from the Gulf of Mexico. They continued to build mounds and to farm as the Adena had done. Later, after the Hopewell culture declined, the Mississippian culture arose in the southeast and along the southern Mississippi River. Cahokia was one piece in the patchwork of Mississippian chiefdom, but it was a big piece. The rise and fall of Cahokia. Cahokia's golden age lasted from AD 950 to 1250. Its people weren't typical urban dwellers, such as merchants or specialized craft workers. Cahokia was a lot of farmers living very close together. It started out as a cluster of small villages, but grew rapidly when people moved to the area to take part in the great mound-building project. The city of mounds was made possible by an agricultural revolution, the shift to growing maize. I'm turning to page 95. Before Cahokia's rise, people were slowly hunting the local deer and bison toward extinction. Meat was becoming scarcer, and farming couldn't make up the difference. Most crops, such as maygrass, had tiny seeds. It took a huge amount of seeds and work to feed a family. The people needed a new food source, and they found one. Although maize had been around for hundreds of years, the Hopewell people hadn't shown much interest in it. Around AD 800, though, the hungry Mississippians started cultivating maize in the flat plains along the river. Maize fed the growing population of the area, and it also fed the growth of community institutions, such as storehouses for grain. Organizing and supervising the people of storehouses is one way a central power could have emerged. From there, it was a short step to building other community structures, such as the mounds and the canals. Although maize helped Cahokia rise, it also played a part in the city's downfall. Cahokia was the first time Indians north of the Rio Grande had tried to feed and shelter 15,000 people in one place, and they made beginner's mistakes. To get wood, 96, for cooking fires and home construction, they cut all the trees on the surrounding hills. To clear fields for maize, they removed all the brush and natural vegetation. Because the city kept getting bigger, the brush and forest couldn't not return. Meanwhile, people went further and further out to cut trees. Hauling the logs back to the city became more and more difficult. Sometime between AD 1100 and 1200, the Cahokians dug a long channel that caused part of a second, larger creek to dump its water into Canteen Creek. This turned Canteen Creek into a river flowing right through the city. Woodcutters upstream could float logs down to Cahokia on the new waterway, which also provided the city with plenty of water. Too much water, as it turned out. Heavy summer rains beat down on the area. Without trees on the hills to slow the flow of water, rainfall rushed rapidly into the creeks, making them deeper and faster than ever. Mudslides and floods became common. Starting at about 1200, Canteen Creek flooded again and again, destroying Cahokia's maize harvest. Then sometime around 1300, a big earthquake struck. Already weakened by the floods, the city never recovered. There was social unrest, maybe even civil war, and by 1350, the city was almost empty. Last page, page 97. A changing landscape. While the Cahokians were planting their fields and planting their mounds, maize was spreading through the eastern half of what is now the United States. For thousands of years, Native Americans had shaped the landscape, mainly with fire. They used their axes only to clear small grounds. As maize swept in, though, Indians burned and chopped thousands of acres, mainly in river valleys, to plant the new crops, and they kept the new fields clear. After a period of trial and error, they learned how to plant wisely, to avoid floods and mudslides. Before long, maize fields surrounded many villages. Forests surrounded the villages, but the Indians were changing the forest too. Before, they had burned the undergrowth to create new growth for grazing deer and elk. Now they started replanting large stretches of woodlands, turning them into orchards of fruit and nut trees. They harvested chestnuts, hickory nuts, hazelnuts, beechnuts, acorn, pecans, walnuts, and butternuts from thousands of trees that they had planted. Within a few hundred years after adopting maize, the Indians of the eastern forest had transformed their landscape. What was once a patchwork game park had become a mixture of farmlands and orchards. Enough forest was left to allow for hunting, but agriculture was on the rise. The Native Americans had created a new balance of nature. End cap. Within a few hundred years, the Indians had transformed their landscape.